Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Backtalk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Oh, how sweet. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Bill Cohen.
And this is Backtalk. Well, wouldn't you know, the famous folk singer from Ohio, Bill Cohen, has suddenly stopped in with guitar. And wouldn't you know, the timing is just right because a complete unknown is playing in theaters now. And this is about certainly one of my favorite singers, and I suspect that Bill knows him quite well. It's a biopic about Bob Dylan.
People who already are curious about Bob Dylan, those of us who are trying to figure out how did this guy come from Minnesota to New York City,
yes,
a complete unknown, and how did he quickly become a national treasure, a genius at songwriting? This is a movie you will love.
Oh, Bob Zimmerman, I think, was his name.
Bobby, little Bobby Zimmerman.
Little Bobby,
yeah.
Zimmerman. It's a great shot when he's in the village, just carrying his guitar. Nobody.
Yeah, those early shots, you see a very busy and well-worn Greenwich Village. It's full of energy and music, and for those of us who kind of just feel nostalgic for that era, oh, it's wonderful.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear that. So you're favorable to the movie?
Oh, yeah. I love this movie. Usually I say I don't like movies where actors portray events that I'm familiar with. I'd rather see documentaries. I like the old grainy black and white footage of Dylan and the Greenwich Village music scene. But I was entranced by this movie because the actors are so... They're brilliant.
They're singing their own songs. Timothée Chalamet, who plays Dylan, he's singing his songs. It's his voice.
He's singing and he's playing and he's doing it to perfection, and he doesn't overdo it. He doesn't make a caricature out of Dylan. He could be really whiny and carry it to extremes, but instead he backs off just a touch. And you can hear Dylan's voice there.
He's got this nasal quality to
just
it.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
doesn't
yeah.
Doesn't overdo it.
But
oh.
I also find what I find so entrancing about your voice, and you know I've gone to as many of your concerts as I can, to when you finally said, John, haven't you had enough?
That's right, yeah.
And I said, no, I haven't, because I love your choice of songs and I love your voice. And your voice has a kind of unconventional rasp to it that is really works very well.
Well, thanks. I try to sing sweetly, but what I love about Dylan is his voice is not sweet. And he taught us you don't need to have a sweet voice, especially if you're singing songs that have a rough edge, that have grit and dust and dirt in them. You want that rough voice, so he doesn't need to be on key all the time. That's what he helped teach us,
I think that's part of the charm. I used to love guys who would just talk their way through songs, like Richard Burton and Richard Harris and some of those others, these guys who were not singers. They had such beautiful voices that when they did it, I was mesmerized by it.
Talking blues sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think,
yeah,
I think Dylan, a couple of Dylan songs are called something like Talking Blues.
Yeah, right. Yeah. In the movie, you know, where in this biopic do you find it most powerful? Is it just because Chalamet sings his song so well? Or is there any other part of that film that you like?
It's almost disturbing, but the parts I love are the parts where you see that Dylan, he's cold, he's distant.
Boy, isn't he ever.
He's not emotional. I don't remember seeing him laugh or smile very much at all. And yet here he is. He has just had great sex, we figure, with his girlfriend, Sylvie, who's named in
right.
the movie,
yeah.
and with Joan Baez.
Yeah,
and
good.
Yet right after that, instead of cuddling with these women for hours in bed, no, he's up 4 feet away, sitting in a chair in a t-shirt writing his latest lyrics. So he's portrayed, and who knows how accurate it is, he's portrayed as a very, he's got no emotion, he's got no joy, but he's got genius that drives him onward.
Well, he's so interior. I mentioned in my written review about how you can't flush him out. He just doesn't allow himself to give of himself.
He's not vulnerable. He's self-centered.
Wow.
He's just totally himself. Yeah.
And I think some people would object that he was actually colder than Chalamet portrays him.
Because, oh, I see. You're saying.
Yeah. You know, but
he's even more.
He's even right. Oh, if you think, yeah, I know it. The other actors in this, what did you think about Pete Seeger's?
Oh, I loved Ed Norton, I think.
Yeah, oh boy, for sure.
And he portrays, I think, Pete Seeger brilliantly. I think he's so earnest and not syrupy, sweet earnest, just perfectly earnest. You can see that Seeger befriends Dylan in the very early days. He sees his genius.
Yeah.
And he tries to promote him, and he's very, very supportive. Of course, they're both idolizing and being very supportive of Woody Guthrie, who's suffering from Huntington's diseases on his last legs.
Scoot McNairy plays him and does a great job.
Seeger, he's brilliant. We even see him get really upset when Dylan goes electric at the Newport Folk.
Electric Bob Dylan brings up all kinds of thoughts from people who were around that time or who know about that period. This is significant.
That's
change.
Kind of the climax of this whole film.
Whoa, yeah. Wait a minute, it's really. So that's pretty good. His relationship with Joan Baez, is that true?
Well, how do I know what's really true?
I thought you guys were spiritually all connected.
Well, but we figure from what we've read in other biographies of him, it seems pretty accurate. Joan Baez, she's warm. She's beautiful. What a beautiful voice.
Yes.
He doesn't reveal, he's not vulnerable with her.
No.
And in fact, at one point, she says, you're full of S-H-I-T.
Yeah. You're such an a-hole.
She says, yes. And one of them, I don't know if it's her or Sylvie, his girlfriend, says, you know, I didn't come here to have you just ignore me. I'm not here to watch you brood over there at the table and write your brilliant lyrics. You know, we're trying to have a love relationship.
Yeah.
So both women are strong women or develop into strong women, and they see through him, or at least they get angry at him because they can't see through him.
Yeah.
They can't see anything in him. He doesn't make himself vulnerable. Well, so they're both upset at him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. From what I can see with you and your wife, Randy, this is not a problem, that you two seem to have a loving relationship and you seem to appreciate Randy. I know she produces your shows, for goodness sakes,
oh, yeah.
And she makes sure they're...
Yeah, we're a good team.
Yes, you are a great team.
I don't try to do the tech stuff because I would fail, and she doesn't try to sing.
Yes, right.
So we both know our strengths. Yeah, we're a good team.
Do you have a moment to sing something for us?
Sure. Let me do a song I almost never play. As most Dylan songs, I do not claim at all to understand what the heck he's saying, but I love the feel of it. And
good.
I'm going to do not the Dylan version, but a little more close to what the Byrds did with some of his songs.
Yeah.
So let me see what I can do. This is Chimes of Freedom. Far between sundown's finish and midnight's broken toll, we ducked inside the doorway, thunder crashing. As majestic bells of bolts struck shadows in the sounds, seeming to be the chimes of freedom flashing. Flashing for the warriors whose strength is not to fight. Flashing for the refugees on the unarmed road of might. And for each and every underdog soldier in the night, we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing.
Bill, that's beautiful. Never heard the song before. This is what I love about our show. Anything might happen, and here you bring the song out of nowhere. But I'll tell you, from that, the man deserves the Nobel Prize. And he got it. Well, Bill, as we talk more about A Complete Unknown, the film that's out now, really covering only about 4 years of Dylan's early career. This is when he comes to the village, and he makes himself known very quickly. I think we made that point. Meteoric is the cliche they would use for him. But it seems to fit.
One thing the film doesn't answer is, where does this genius come from? He has all these literary references he makes, yet when he was in Hibbing, Minnesota, As a teenager, I don't think he was known for being a great intellectual or songwriter or anything. The movie doesn't really answer that question.
No, it doesn't.
Where does this genius come from?
And I love that comment because it's a constant irritation to me that movies that try to depict artists actually never can get to it. And maybe that's the point. There's something so in there. Their psyches. They're so gifted. Where does this stuff come from? However, and the people I admire in movies, for instance, are the casting directors. And how do they know this actor? I was thinking about Francis Ford Coppola and having Brando play The Godfather. How did he know that? And other people said, what? And how do you just know that? Now, the inspiration here would be, or the person who was inspired, among others, was Pete Seeger. What do you know about Seeger?
Oh, well, Pete Seeger had such a, I mean, I remember him well. Right around the time I was born, he was with a group called the Almanac Singers.
Oh, that's right.
This left-wing, I mean, they were left-wing labor. Some, of course, then he got in trouble, his brush with communists, the Communist Party.
Yes, actually called himself a communist right out there.
That's right. But he didn't cooperate with congressional committees and found him in contempt of Congress, as I remember. Then he was with the Weavers, which was a great folk. Also a bunch of left-wing folk singers.
Good night, Irene.
Good night, Irene.
Wow.
Yeah, which is a great example of how it was written by a black folk singer, Leadbelly,
right.
Who was a prison inmate at one point in the Deep South. So, of course, he's black, so he writes this great song, but, of course, it doesn't get popular. But then the Weavers take it in 1950, put an orchestra in the background, and it becomes the top song on the hit parade. This is symbolic, of course, what's happened throughout a lot of music, whether it's folk music, rock and roll. The early black performers and geniuses behind some of it don't get the full accolades and the money that they deserve. Pete Seeger, so then he went off after they got blacklisted. The Weavers get blacklisted for a while. Then he goes off on his solo career and does beautiful things in the 60s, 70s, 80s. Very active against the war in Vietnam, civil rights, on and on.
Well, some of his songs, Bill, If I Had a Hammer, the covers that he does, it was actually called the Hammer Song. And it was very popular. He did that with Lee Hayes of the Weavers.
Yes.
And then Kisses Sweeter Than Wine, also with Hayes.
That's the Weaver stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And turn, turn, turn.
He swipes those words right out of the book of Ecclesiastes in the Bible. Of course, that's what folk music does. You borrow, you steal, you adapt, And then where have all the flowers gone?
Oh, come on.
He takes that from some Ukrainian or Russian song that he heard some soldiers singing in the 50s.
Yes.
Adds a couple extra verses, and he becomes Where Have All the Flowers Gone? Brilliant.
Bill, flower song is so much what Dylan would have done. Is that Dylan's? No, it isn't. That was strictly Seeger.
There's a similarity in that both the Seeger would do songs, and his voice wasn't the world's greatest, and he had banjo. Some of his songs would be made beautiful and perfect and popular by groups like Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Right, exactly.
And the same thing with Dylan.
Yes.
You know, some songs I want to hear Dylan, quote, sing, end quote. Other songs I don't want to hear him sing. I want Peter, Paul, and Mary.
I know. And I think Baez sang.
And Baez would do, yes.
And you're right. They're beautiful adaptations that we don't even need him. I mean, I'm attracted to his offbeat voice. And even when you see him, he's usually looking down, and he's such a character.
Randy and I went to a concert of Bob Dylan's like 15, 20 years ago, and I can't remember what the song of it was, but he's singing. It's Nationwide Arena, and I turned to Randy and I said, when is he going to sing, I don't know,
Blowing
Times
in
They
the
Are
wind.
Changing or Blowing in the Wind?
Yeah.
And she says, he's singing it right now. I says, what? I didn't even recognize it. But that just...
The way he was singing it now.
He was singing it, but it wasn't recognizable to my ears. So
I have been to your concerts, and you have played some of the same songs.
Yeah.
And I think this is you were questioning my sanity, listening to you do it again. I love it every time. How does that work? He hated it. He says in the movie, they want me to sing Blowing in the Wind because they want, who's going to sing it? Well, I'm going to sing some version they don't want. How do you make that? How do you make that work for me? I don't know. What's your magic that I'm sitting there hearing you sing the same song? You don't always do this, but you'll now and then bring in one.
Well, it's the song that's the genius. Songs are blowing in the wind. It's timeless. That's what's so brilliant. In fact, that's why I often introduce it by saying, this song was written 60 years ago. Think how it resonates today.
Oh, you were so right.
Or, you know, songs like Day Is Done that Peter, Paul, and Mary used to do 60 years ago during the Vietnam War and dark times then, and it resonates today. That's the genius of a brilliant folk style song, is that it's not you know, the specific headlines of 60 years ago. No, it's about universal truths. And so that's why most of us never tire of hearing that kind of song again and again.
Dylan's background, whether his family...
Well, fairly middle class.
Yeah.
And that's what's interesting is, you know, a lot of times the artists and even the revolutionaries don't come from always the downtrodden, the poor, the hungry. Not always. Sometimes it comes from upper middle class people who've really enjoyed a nice standard of living. They haven't been particularly oppressed, but they do a genius job at creating great art that may talk about suffering and war,
yes, right,
and poverty and other issues and struggles.
You're so right, and I love that your comment. It is the songs, isn't it? Much as I like the style of the different people who sing it, in the end, it comes down to it is the song. And this Nobel Literature winner, it's his words, and that's where the real genius of it all comes.
The fact that you can have a songwriter get a Nobel Prize for Literature, I mean, that just says it right there. No one would have even thought of that idea. It would be preposterous 50 years ago to say a songwriter could. And yet you could say, well, a guy like Paul Simon,
yeah,
or a guy like Bob Dylan, this stuff, it is literature.
It is
poetry.
Analogously, I'm thinking of Brando having somebody else come and read the speech when he won the Oscar. It doesn't even show. And Dylan doesn't even show the Nobel, to pick up his Nobel Prize.
It just adds to his mystique.
Oh, and then
as a guy who's indecipherable. We have no idea what is in his head.
Did he not know that this was good for his persona? Yeah, he probably did. He probably was that smart. He knows that if he's cranky and if he's into himself and so on, it's probably even better for his act.
Yeah, you know, who knows? I doubt this. I'm just making this up. Oh, Albert Grossman. He was one of the first guys. He was the promoter and producer,
yeah,
and manager of, yeah, Dylan in the early day. He saw his genius. That's the kind of thing, what you just said about, oh, maybe it was all part his
yes,
planning,
right,
to be at the Nobel ceremony. That might have been some PR guy
who
thought that up, or he thought that up himself. But that just reminded me of a guy in the film here, Grossman, who plays a pivotal role in Dylan's career, is a genius who most Americans have never heard of.
Oh, yeah,
and yet he helped launch Dylan. He's the one who put together Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Yeah.
So behind all these people's stories are unknown people who play key roles, and we've never heard about half of them.
Oh, yeah. They all influenced each other. One of the key parts of this film, again, we're talking about a complete unknown that's out in theaters now, about Bob Dylan's early years, the early 60s. Tell me about that, the struggle between him and Pete Seeger. Do you know anything about that?
Pete was more of the, hey, let's have a sing-along.
Yes, you got it.
And he'd love to get people with just regular voices to get together and have a hootenanny. But he also respected Dylan, and he loved Dylan. He helped nurture and mentor Dylan. But then came the Newport Folk Festival 1965,
when, yeah,
Dylan goes electric and shocks, no pun intended, the crowd with his electric performance. And it's so loud, and we see Pete Seeger going crazy, at one point looking at some axes and figuring he's going to take an axe and actually cut the audio cables to the high-powered sound systems, and his wife Toshi stops him. I don't think it was so much that Seeger was upset that Dylan was going electric. From what I've heard and read from his comments later, is he was so upset that it was so loud.
You're right.
And that's not,
yes,
what folk is about.
I think even the film would like us to believe it is that conflict between traditional and new. And yet it wasn't. Seeger was really upset that it was so loud. What he wanted to do, as any folk singer wants, is for you to hear the words.
Yes.
To me, that's what I love about what you guys do. Love hearing the words. I love hearing a story. Electrify that, and you start playing really fast. You can lose it. It can be drowned out, even if you hear the words.
I think Seeger was open-minded enough that he would be glad to hear Dylan's electric version.
Yes.
If he could understand the words, and if the crowd could understand the words, and if the soul of the song could come through. I don't think he was that outraged. He liked innovation.
Seeger, yeah,
was,
yeah,
not a total Luddite.
I thought I've seen you plug in your guitar. Is that right or wrong?
Yeah, well, we plug it in just to amplify, but we don't use electric guitars, no, in general.
Oh, that's right. So you're amplifying your acoustic.
Yeah, that's right. You still want to have an acoustic.
Are you doing that now?
Material.
I see. I'm so mesmerized by what you do. Do you do that now? Do you plug in your...
With Randy's help, we go high tech. We don't have to, quote, plug it in because it's wireless.
Of course.
What an invention.
Right,
of course. The guitar is wireless. Some of the microphones are wireless.
Randy is so nice to stop by. And she's in our audience
here. Randy's here. She knows how to plug all that stuff in.
So, Randy, how does that, is that okay? Did that work okay?
Otherwise, you couldn't hear him.
Yeah. But also, it lets me roam around sometimes.
Oh, I like that. You did more of that in your last concert.
Audience and get 3 feet away.
I like that a lot.
Right in the eye and get them to sing along. So yes, it does give the performer a freedom.
We're about out of time.
We're out of time.
Bill Cohen, tell me about this. You often mention in your concerts about this folk singing society. What is that?
The Columbus Folk Music Society. It's just an informal group of people who love to sing folk songs, who love to jam, and some people who don't sing at all. They just want to listen.
Yeah.
And so we have monthly concerts with featured performers. But during that event, before that, we have an open mic where two or three people can get up for 10 or 12 minutes. And whether they're good or bad or experienced or inexperienced, they can see what it's like to perform before a welcoming crowd. And then before that, we have a jam where people just sit around in a circle and take turns leading a folk song. And everybody else plays along. So we have that. We have a yearly folk music festival up at the High Banks Metro Park.
Right.
10,000 or more people the last several years. It's been wonderful. So we have a lot of fun. Fun is the bottom line. There's also a little education, a little inspiration, and music.
Now, are there people playing? Now, you and Randy are touring practically Ohio with your charitable concerts, which everybody has to truly appreciate. For me, it's a gift.
Well, thank you. KG. Yeah, we're mostly in Columbus. We've done shows in Cleveland and Cincinnati and Dayton and other states. So we have fun with that.
Now, what I like is that you really carry the spirit of the 60s that we were talking about, Seeger, Baez, Dylan, and so on, which was protest-related, message-related. And I think you continue that tradition when you think about it 50, 60 years later.
Our concerts usually have themes.
Yes,
We love to come up with a theme, and then you build a concert around it. So some of our themes are a romantic love one for Valentine's Day. We do one all about the 1960s. We do one about gratitude. The day after Thanksgiving.
Yes.
We just did one about the solstice. The theme was, it's light. The darkest day of the year, literally and maybe figuratively, but there's a new year coming. The days will get longer. What can we do in the year ahead to make it a brighter new year? So we love to put together music and themes.
Oh, yeah, because I was there as a darkness to light.
Yeah.
And in fact, you even kept that place dark for at least 10 minutes, and I thought that was a good move with candles.
Yeah.
It was, slightly corny, which was a part of really good part of the warmth of the, and the house was full.
Yeah, and then we brought candles in, and the glow warmed us all up. So that was kind of the theme. Let's look forward to a brighter new year.
Your Valentine's Day coming.
Yeah, February 1st, it's going to be a benefit for the Central Ohio Folk Festival.
Yeah, oh, good.
We got some background singers. Oh, I love harmony, vocal harmony and instrumental harmony. We've got some great musicians doing backup, and we'll have a lot of fun. It won't just be folk music, but pop music too, but all with the theme of the different stages of love, infatuation, betrayal, breakups, and finally committed love. So there's all these different things. We have a lot of fun.
This is February 1st.
7 o'clock at Columbus Mennonite Church in the Clintonville neighborhood.
Good venues. You have terrific backups for all your people.
I'm in my glory when I'm surrounded by great harmony vocals and stuff. Oh, it's great.
I'd be remiss if I didn't remind people that when I first knew Bill Cohen, I didn't know him personally, but I knew him because I was in radio 20 years ago in WCBE, and he was broadcasting through all the NPR channels. He was the voice of the State House.
Yeah, well, I used to be one of few State House reporters.
You were the prominent one, man. You were the one I knew.
Well, good. Okay. Yeah. But that was serious, covering state government and politics. I used to joke that I got to ask the tough questions, the most powerful Ohio officials. I got to ask the tough questions. Yeah. I never got any answers, but I got to ask the tough questions.
Well, Bill Cohen, thank you so much for coming. I cannot wait for the even remotely related topic that I can bring you back and have Randy sit there in the audience watching everything we do, because she's a very good producer. But all in all, today we were talking about Timothée Chalamet as Bob Dylan and his movie, A Complete Unknown. And Bill, do you have any words about A Complete Unknown for our audience before we sign off?
See it. If you have any interest in Bob Dylan, in folk music history, the early 1960s, if you have any curiosity about it, see the movie.
And I'll tell you what really surprised me, how much music there is in this.
Snippets of all songs, one right after the other.
Yeah. Fitting, just right.
And a mix of historical events like the Cuban Missile Crisis and things like that, yeah, and March on Washington and civil rights rallies. You see it all blend together, which is what Dylan, the early years, was all about.
We'll probably be getting a call from Timothée Chalamet after this, complimenting us on what we've done for his career.
Oh, I hope so.